Once upon a time, two men decided if they were making the cut. And then they made the cut. And now JT and Aaron are talking everything from wrestling to pop culture and beyond, because it's no holds barred.
Will you back down, turn and run, or stand up with the best?
No holds barred.
Are you still at all concerned about the Bermuda situation?
So the fact that it's positioned where it is makes me more worried about the Bermuda Triangle than I think I've been in the past.
Because you assume it's closer than you thought it would be?
Right. Like, I mean, North Carolina could get caught up in it. We don't want to lose North Carolina.
So when I was a kid and I learned about the Bermuda Triangle, I had just watched a G.I. Joe miniseries about a pyramid of darkness.
Mm.
And I assumed that it had something, it was a similar problem.
Right.
Although I didn't imagine people in the real world moving these giant black cubes around and creating a pyramid over the earth.
Look, I don't want to rule it out.
Yeah, I guess not.
I guess it's not super close to North Carolina. It boggles my mind because I feel like there's no other island like this that's so far on its own that people go to. Like, if you look at the Caribbean, and so, like, everything's kind of close to other things, right?
Right.
Everywhere in the world, really. Like, and even Hawaii, even though that's in the middle of nowhere, it's kind of, like, biggish, right?
Right.
It worries me that Bermuda is so on its own in the middle of nowhere and so tiny.
Yeah, like, how did we know to go there for resorts and shit?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was discovered pretty early on, right? Because it's on the way, I'm guessing.
I guess. But it doesn't seem like it's that big. Like, if you're, like, a little bit off, you're going to miss it.
Right. I mean, what are the odds? It was discovered in the early 1500s by Juan de Bermudez. So that's why it's called Bermuda.
Uh-huh. Do you think it was popularized by that Beach Boys song?
Yeah, I mean, they wanted to go there. They wanted to take you.
Is Kokomo a real island? Is that a thing?
That song, it sticks in my head, A, because I hear it a lot from on Yacht Rock. But also, I remember Brad Willing, a Place to Be Nation fame, saying that was the only good Yacht Rock song and that he liked that song. So whenever I hear that song, I think of Brad.
Hmm.
So Kokomo is a community in Hawaii.
Wait, because now he's singing about too many islands in two different places. Too many different places.
Okay, now actually, so it was its own island. Kokomo Island is a privately owned island in Jamaica, now called Sandals Cay. So Sandals bought Kokomo.
Is that where Michael Scott took Jan Levinson Gould?
No, didn't he go to Jamaica? I think he went.
Yeah, but it's an island in Jamaica, right?
It's privately owned Sandals Royal Caribbean all-inclusive resort in Montego Bay. It's apparent that the Sandals resorts have almost the identical island in the Nassau Bahamas location. The original name for the island came from the song Kokomo.
Wait, Island
was because of the name Kokomo, apparently.
So before it wasn't called Kokomo, it had like some probably very dignified indigenous name. And then when
I think
they
it's
want
just like a part. I don't know. So I'm reading the. It's quite the rabbit hole. So now I'm reading about the song.
Yeah.
Okay, it is fictional. Yeah. Its lyrics describe two lovers taking a trip to a relaxing place on Kokomo, a utopic island off the Florida Keys. In addition to the fictional Kokomo, the song also makes references to many real Caribbean islands, including Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take ya. To Bermuda, Bahamas.
Come on, pretty mama.
Martinique and Montserrat is what they also say.
Yeah. So it's the Beach Boys are singing fictional songs?
Yeah, this one at least.
So did they have their T-Bird removed at any point?
It was taken away.
Yeah.
The video for Kokomo is pretty famous. You know the video?
I don't think I've seen it since the 80s.
It's at the recently opened Grand Floridian Resort in Florida, and it's like on stage. And John Stamos is in the video playing steel drum.
He'd be canceled for that today. He can't play the steel drum.
At least he didn't have like blackface on or anything, so that's good.
Not like our prime minister in Canada.
That's right.
Hey-o.
All right, so it's confirmed. Kokomo is fictional, but now real. So. And then not. And then no longer real.
And Sandals the Bermuda ball. Triangle is still a problem.
There's actually six cities named Kokomo in the United States. I'll read you the states real quick, and then we'll get started. Kokomo, Arkansas.
Okay.
Kokomo, Colorado, which is a ghost town in Summit City, or Summit County. Kokomo, Hawaii. It's on the island of Maui.
That one makes sense.
Kokomo, Indiana.
All right.
And there's also Indiana University Kokomo branch. Kokomo, Mississippi. And Kokomo, Texas.
Wouldn't it be just like a whole big surprise the Beach Boys were singing about Kokomo, Tennessee this whole time?
That'd be awesome. Or Arkansas.
Yeah.
I'd like to learn more about ghost towns.
Like
an episode on ghost towns.
Are you referring to where they are or what the problems of the particular ghosts are?
It reached zero population in the 1960s. It's used as a tailings dump. Colorado, Kokomo, Colorado.
My wife and I are always talking if like one of us dies first, we're going to haunt the other.
Mm. What, you can move to Kokomo, Colorado and own the town.
That's where they go. That's just where they go.
I just picture one guy there playing the piano. I think it's piano. What are those things called? Like the saloon piano?
I knew you were going to say saloon. Like they're hanging out.
That's it. I think Haunted Mansion has warped everyone's views of what a ghost town would look like. All right. Anyway, so welcome to No Holds Barred. Now you've learned all about Bermuda, Kokomo, and its
a detailed show about Beach Boys songs and positions of islands.
Okay. So this is our second installment, Aaron, of our ranking every WWE World Heavyweight title reign of all time. And it's every world title because I didn't botch it. I just wasn't clear on Place to Be Podcast. When I was plugging this, I said every title change.
Yeah.
Meaning world. Oh. And Scott thought I meant every title change. Like every IC, tag, every belt.
Good Lord.
So don't rule that out in the future of the show at some point. But
imagine how long we'd be on like 1999 for.
Oh, God, forever. I think, yeah. I mean, there's going to be, the tag's going to be the most, right? Like, I think IC may be kind of doable, but the tag would be, like, brutal.
The hardcore?
Well, I mean, some of those are, like, 30-second reigns. So.
And then Mosh pinned him.
And nothing happened. All right, so we are doing every world title change. On our first episode, we covered 8 matches. We went from Bruno Sammartino defeating Booty Rogers up until Iron Sheik defeating Bob Backlund. And tonight, we're only going to dive into 2 matches, but they're big ones. And it felt fitting that they had to kind of be together. And the way we're trying to do this is bookend reigns in ways. Like, they may go beyond a certain guy's title reigns, but we wanted to try and do our best to sometimes include, like, the win and the loss of a certain wrestler in one episode.
Yes. Yes, or at the very least, like, kind of like a little era all unto itself.
Correct. Correct. So sometimes that may encompass 2 of them. But sometimes it may encompass just 1, like tonight.
Yeah, like the first show we did, the era was the era we don't really care about.
Correct, that aren't going to rank high. But we'll see. So the highest of that ranking was the first match we watched, and that was Buddy Rogers and Bruno Sammartino. I think it made sense that finished the highest because of the moment and the significance of it all.
Yeah, for sure. And then you have Bruno's reign. But it's crazy because even with that one, because we're ranking, we have 5 categories that we each rank out of 10, which gives us a total score of 100. And the highest from last one scored a staggering 51.
Right.
So while it did rank high among the early title changes, I don't know how well it's going to hold up going forward.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, because we got some big, like, I think one of the interesting trends is going to be for us how this levels off as we go. Like, because early, every world title change was such a big deal, right? So yeah. I feel like all these early ones are going to score high. And then at some point, we're going to hit a tipping point where they're not as important, right? And I'm kind of look at the Mankind Rock series or something like that, right?
Right.
Where, like, at some point they're going to level off and not always mean as much as they do here. However, I think match quality may also start to improve as we get into, you know, more recent years as well. So I think that will start to balance out. So we'll see how many – I'm just curious how much of the new era will really hang with, like, the big dogs of the 80s and 90s. And how much of that is an us thing, you know, versus the reality.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I totally think you're right that the you're going to see an inversion of the importance with the match quality.
Right.
And that'll be the most interesting statistical factor involved in this.
All right. Do you want to just review the categories quick before we get started?
Yeah, sure. So we're ranking on five different categories. We each give a score out of 10 on each. The first is match quality. The second is significance, which I think, yeah, well, that's all self-explanatory. The next is the moment. So, I mean, was there a big pop? Like, what actually, how did everything play out? Build, and then finally aftermath. And aftermath is very much about the title reign and the storylines that came after.
Correct. Yeah, and also a little bit of, like, I guess this plays into significance, but aftermath is also, yeah, like, did it help the company? Did it hurt the company, et cetera, too? So.
Exactly. So, like, right. Bret Hart's always going to tank in that one.
Correct. He's a bum. So first up, as we mentioned last episode, Iron Sheik had defeated Bob Backlund on December 26, 1983. And we fast forward less than a month later to January 23rd, 1984 in Madison Square Garden on the MSG Network. I would think this has to probably be one of the most watched of this all of this list. I mean, would you put it up there? Hulk Hogan challenging the Iron Sheik in January of 84?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like so much of that, too, is also just like my own personal history. Like when I was a kid, I'd rent all the Hulkamania tapes.
Right.
And then I remember always going out of my way to find the one where Hulk Hogan won the title. So,
yeah, it's going to be the most seen, one of the most seen on this list. Just, you know, the match, the clip, like, because they've had it on so many compilations and aired on so many times. You know, it's like, it's definitely one of the most showcased on this list for sure.
Yeah, we can all picture the pin. Right?
Correct. Yep. Yep.
Like the hands together, he's yelling.
It's up there. And Hulk Hogan had just arrived back in the WWF. So he had been around in like 1980 or so as a heel. He even had a match with Bob Backlund. And then he left, spent a little time in New Japan, but mainly he was in the AWA from 81 to 83. And part of the reason was he got offered the role of Thunder Lips in Rocky III. Vince McMahon Sr. didn't want him to do it. And he basically said, well, fuck off. I'm going to not turn this down. I'm going to obviously be in this monster movie. And as a result, he ended up signing with the AWA because Vern Gagne didn't care, and he let him do the movie. Hogan started as a heel, turned face, and really became a megastar there. Like, he turned face in July of 81 and just completely took over as a top star. And he had a little feud with Nick Bockwinkel, but they never gave him the title. They did one fake out, one dusty finish where Hogan won, but they overturned it. And that completely, like, rattled Hogan's faith in AWA, and also just, like, really took a number on their fan base. It was a perfect example, and this resonates with me today, right? Because a lot of the talk on AEW today in the current product is how in tune they are with when to pull the trigger on, like, faces winning and getting their moment with giving their fans what they want.
Right.
And it sticks out here, what a missed opportunity for Vern Gagne. Now, you could say, would Hogan have stuck around long? I don't know. Like, at some point, sure, Vince was going to come calling, right? but maybe he has more loyalty and he sticks around for a bit. And maybe he catches fire as world champion. But, you know, they pissed off a large amount of the fan base. And once Vince Jr. took over and decided he was going to handpick Hogan to be his centerpiece based on Rocky and just based on his overall charisma, that was it. So he showed back up on December 27th, 83. On January 7th, he saved Bob Backlund from an attack by the Wild Samoans, and Backlund basically gave him the endorsement, said he's changed his ways, he's not going to blast you anymore, and that was it. Like, 2 weeks later, he's the world champion. So it's a crazy whirlwind return for him.
I don't know if Hulk Hogan ever would have really fit in Minnesota.
He kind of was. Like, he was like a rock star there if you watch some of that stuff. Like, he was super over. And a megastar. So it's not like they were trying to push him and he wasn't getting over. I don't know how long he would have lasted even as world champion. But you just wonder if some loyalty, if they pull the trigger and put it on him, does he stay longer and not bail out, right?
I was just saying any sentence there to say the word Minnesota.
You could have said he left Minnesota.
Yes, yeah, that probably would have been a more cogent point.
Mm. So, yeah, so I mean, a crazy, crazy return. And they knew right away, like, this is the guy.
It's clear. Like, as soon as you see him at the beginning of this match, the crowd is already going absolutely crazy for him.
Yeah, just bonkers. And he had only been back, I mean, weeks. Like, how many people could possibly, like, seen that, you know? Like, he was on TV, saved Backlund, and that's it. So you have to wonder, like, I guess maybe there was some crossover with AEW. I mean, here we go. AWA awareness and, you know, seeing him there. I guess, or Rocky. I guess, you know, I haven't seen Rocky, so.
We should probably also give some credit to the Sheik for how over he is here. Because yeah, I would imagine the Sheik is hated, right?
Well, you can feel it here when he comes out. Like, the boos are just pouring down. And Blassie was hated, too, so it was a good pairing. Yeah. And I love the pre-match promo. Like, well, Blassie said, they pulled the 96 on us, whatever that is, by swapping Hogan for Backlund at the last minute. So this was supposed to be Bob Backlund, but he was still injured from that attack by the Samoans. And so Hogan takes a slot. And yeah, I love the heat on Sheik. You could tell that the win, because they did this so quick in the same city, the win over Backlund was still fresh in the minds of the people there, too. So
yeah,
they're like extra angry.
And it was kind of a bullshit win, too. Right? Like with the towel and.
Right. Like Backlund had been the guy for so long, and then they blatantly screwed him with this like crazy finish right in the same building.
So. Now, when you saw Hogan in the. So when you see Hogan in the ring with the Sheik, did you get the impression that Sheik's just fucking dead here?
Yeah. I would think this has to be one of the most obvious ones we're going to do. Like. And they weren't, I guess there was a world where maybe like they try and stretch it out. Right. And Hogan maybe wins this one by DQ or something. And they do, but I'm glad they did it. Like, I think Vince knew like time to get the ball rolling. Let's just go and get this guy going. Like, we're not going to buy much more out of Hogan, get like a 3-month run to get the title off of Sheik or something.
No.
He knew he was much more likely to draw with Hogan on top at this point. So yes, I think, yes, I'll be curious. I kind of wish we could like track that with one of these rankings too. I guess we'll have to mentally just do it. Like, how many of these feel like obvious as we're going through them? I think this is, you know, we obviously aren't as in tune with the other ones before this, so we can start it here, but I'm just going to put a little tracker on the side.
Sure.
Like, this one to me was super obvious.
Well, and then I think it's number one, it's the environment and everything, but like, I mean, I guess I'd forgotten, but like, I was shocked how much bigger Hogan was than Sheik.
Yes.
Like, it's like, oh, God, Sheik's dead. Like, he's just dead. He's going to get destroyed by this guy. Like, not just beat, but, like, pummeled into the ground, you know? Like, I think it's just because, like, Sheik's big, but he's short. Like, I feel like Hogan's, like, a head and a half taller than him.
Yeah, he looked like a monster out there. And he looked like Thunderlips. I mean, that's what he looked like out there. And Gorilla is already, they were already pushing Hulkamania. And I know that was an AWA thing. But he says it right away. As soon as Hogan comes out, he's like, Hulkamania is taking over New York City. So that's already established. It's not something that's going to grow with him. Like, he's already Hulk Hogan, about to be world champion, Hulkamania running wild, like on day one here.
How quickly today would they sue a company for doing that exact thing?
Right. I mean, unless Hogan had trademarked it, I have no idea. But I don't think that stuff was as big a deal back then. Like, I doubt Vern was at the trademark office, the patent office, patenting Hulkamania.
No, but it's just you hear stories of, like, I mean, they're not going to sue him, but you hear stories of them asking Daniel Bryan not to do the yes chance, you know, like.
Right.
This is exactly taking from somebody else. Like,
ripping it right off. And Hogan's is a force of nature here. Like, this wild manic start. He's mauling Sheik. He takes off Sheik's robe and smothers him with it.
Jumps him from behind.
Oh, just beating the shit out of him. A flurry, and then he just nails this awesome axe bomber, and the fucking crowd goes insane. Like, the pace here out of the gate was wild.
Yeah, it feels like they're fucking the U.S. Army's blitzing Iran.
Right. Yes, it does. Just overwhelming completely.
And I love that he's the face character, but he's like cheating blatantly with Sheik's robe, and the crowd just doesn't care. They just want Sheik dead.
Well, it sets the tone for Hogan's style to come. Not afraid to get dirty, for sure. and lie about it. But he even spits on Sheik as he's destroying him. Like
just, I know.
Yeah, they're really playing up the and they're really just I think they're just trying to play up the xenophobia part of it.
Of course, and like I love Hogan hits a really nice knee drop, which I don't know if maybe I just haven't watched enough early Hogan, but I'm like, oh, that's a good move for him. And he does that great standing choke on the Sheik early too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which I always as a kid associated as a heel move, but here he is.
Just choking the shit out of him.
Destroying the country of Iran.
It felt cathartic, but it's crazy because of how little build Sheik had. Like, this felt like Warrior Honky, but Honky had been champion for like 18 months, you know what I mean, or whatever, the 14 months. And he had escaped it. Like, this was cathartic. And for a guy that only was, like, champion for 3 weeks. Yeah. But this is, I guess made us, like, Iran part played a role in it as well. Like, if he was just, Stan Stasiak, maybe the heat's not as much. But I think it being in the middle of all that shit going on in the world, you know, because when was Iran-Contra? That was before this, right?
Yeah, and the hostage situation.
Right.
That was like 82, wasn't it?
Oh, no, that's after. It's 85 to 87 was the Contra affair with the hostage.
The hostage was right before the election, right? Yeah, it was right before the 80 election.
So maybe that's a separate thing. Okay.
Were you guys all worked up about that?
I mean, I was just about born. Yeah, the Iran hostage crisis was 79 to 81. Then Iran-Contra was 85.
Do you think that's why you were born?
Because of the
hostage like your parents crisis. Were like, oh, they solved it. They got really happy.
Well, no, because they wouldn't have been solved when I was conceived.
Well, hold on. Let's figure this out. Because when did it end?
81.
It ended on January. Hold on. It ended on January 20th. Oh, 81. Damn it.
I would have been conceived in, March of 80?
Yeah. Well, maybe they were, worried about it. And we're like, it could come here. One of us could become a hostage.
Right. We better procreate now. Well, the crazy thing, too, when you think of, then versus now. So I was born during, a big snowstorm in December. And, car seats weren't a thing. So my dad had a convertible that aren't, a convertible in 1980 is not equipped to drive around in the snow. My mom carried me as a newborn in her lap in a snowstorm in the convertible on the ride home.
How did
anyone survive?
I don't know.
2000s.
Maybe we're just too worried about things today. Because people did survive, clearly, right?
Yeah, I guess there's probably just a lot more people now. So it's more, the risk goes up, right? Of things like that happening.
Right. I guess with more people, we can afford to lose more and it doesn't look as, apparent too.
That's true too. So, anyway, I made the car ride home in the blizzard. So I'm here doing this show. But I don't think the Iran-Contra or Iran hostage situation is why I'm here.
Well, I think you have to have a conversation with your parents.
But it is why this match has a ton of heat. Sheik gets a little offense in. He goes to the back. And the crowd is buzzing during his offense. They're waiting for it.
Yeah.
Then he goes to a Boston Crab and Hogan powers out of that.
Yeah.
And then
I like, too, that the only way Sheik gets control is Hogan missing a giant charge.
Right. Yeah. Nothing Sheik does made him
take. Big mistake. And then before the Boston Crab, he tries to pin Hogan and Hogan shoves him out of the ring on the first kick out.
Right, right. He just flicks him off. And then she goes to the chemical clutch, which you figure this could be trouble, right? Because we already saw happen with Backlund.
Yeah.
And then Hogan just lifts up out of it and just drives Sheik to the fucking corner. Yeah. And that's that. And then he takes him down, hits the leg drop, and we're done. And just a monster pop. And I never realized the post-match of this. So Hogan's celebrating. And I didn't realize how much Sheik played it like he was fucking dead. Like, there was 9 medics around him and officials. Like, he's just laying there. His leg looked like just someone who had fallen out of a fucking building and just wasn't moving.
Yeah.
And it was like when Apollo gets killed by Drago. Like, they were so concerned for him. He's, laying there, out of it. And then he gets up and Hogan just beats the shit out of him again and throws him out of the ring. I don't think I ever paid attention to the post-match like that. Like, Sheik just looked dead. Like, Hogan's celebrating. It's mayhem. And you just got his limp body in the corner with all the officials around him.
Yeah, I never paid attention either. And it's like that. But then I'm watching it again. I'm like, it feels like Hogan has 100 pounds on him.
Yeah.
And it's just I don't want to say it's uncomfortable because we all hated the Sheik. But, like, he's so small compared to him. And Hogan's just, like, I get, like, he dropped that leg on his face. Right? Like, right on the face. That's a large man to jump on your face.
He really was feeling it and crushed him.
Yeah. And just the pandemonium, the energy, like, such an incredible, the pin where he's screaming. He's got his hands locked and he's, like, I love it. I love all of it.
It's an amazing moment. And the crowd loves it. Sheik is dead. Hogan's celebrating. We had a great locker room celebration with Andre the Giant, Rocky Johnson, and Ivan Paduski coming in with the champagne. And it's flowing everywhere. Like, that's another iconic moment because we do see it later during the build to other matches. But
yeah,
Andre pouring the champagne on Hogan and the old school green belt with Gene in the midst of it. So, again, that caps it. I know it wasn't the style at the time, but it's still crazy to me that this didn't close this show in MSG. I get it. Like, this is how they did things back then. But it's nuts that, like, this felt like if any world title change, like, this should have been the one to close out that night. Imagine sitting around after that and just watching whoever the fuck roll out there for the next match.
I'm looking it up right now to see
who's going. What's the rest of it? I think Andre, it's an Andre tag in the main event, right?
Look it up.
Because, I mean, this is, like, literally in the middle of the card. It's not even, like, toward the end, I don't think.
The 23rd, right?
Yeah.
Where are we? There we go. Okay, so where's Hogan? Okay, well, it's almost done. He's, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Jimmy... After. So right after this, Jimmy Snuka pins Rene Goulet. And then Andre the Giant, Rocky Johnson, and Tony Atlas defeat the Samoans.
Right, and those matches are both under 6 minutes. So, yeah, you're right. It was, and actually, before that, I mean, Morocco and Tito had a 16-minute match on this. It was Piper's MSG return and Orndorff's MSG. This is a big card. Orndorff beat Sal Bellomo. That's a pretty famous match, too, where Piper's managing him. Slaughter versus Putski. Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty loaded card.
Yeah. The Haiti Kid's on the card, too, so...
Tag with Tiger Jackson.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big main event. I mean, Andre and the tag champs against the Samoans too. So
yeah, for sure. Especially with the Samoans getting that heat for hurting Backlund and like.
And you can see the crowds already, like 26,000 saw him win. And then they hold up like they're over 25,000 in May, 26. They dip a little bit over the summer, but then they're back strong in the fall. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it was a big title change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, massive. I mean, it's a great sprint. The energy is awesome. The crowd is amazing. And the WWF did right away what AWA waited too long to do. And it kind of resonates today in ways when you think about it. But again, you know, pulling the trigger when it was meant to be pulled versus waiting. And AWA fucked around and lost what could have been the guy that saved their, you know, saved their promotion at a time when they needed it. So.
Well, and that's the thing that always confuses me about current WWE is that, like, you have the blueprint. Blueprint's right here. You play it all the time. I know you don't like the dude anymore, but you play it all the time. I don't know why, like, you don't learn from your own history. Like this destroyed this move. I mean, we'll get to it, but like this title change changes everything.
Yes.
Right. And is may probably one of the main primary reasons why WWE ends up being the company it is today.
Right. Yeah, 100%. Like, I don't know anyone else that could have if they don't do this. If Hogan never comes and he gets the AWA belt and stays there for the 3 years, like, does everything get delayed? Just think of it. Like, I don't know if we get WrestleMania 1 or 3.
No.
So, it's crazy.
If Hogan's not there, who becomes champ? Is it Snuka? Does Snuka become the champ? Like,
he's always been the one referenced. I mean, maybe they just don't take it off Backlund.
Then they really got to cover up that murder.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe like Piper turns, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But Piper didn't have the face potential that Hogan, you know, I mean, nobody had the face potential.
I think Snuka is the most over. So maybe they give it to him until they figure it out. Maybe he crushes Sheik. And I mean, because he's like super over in 84, 83 and 84.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they make a play for Dusty or something. Like, I don't know. I have no idea.
Maybe Mick Foley doesn't go to that. He gets a bit disillusioned and doesn't go watch the cage match.
I mean, it's possible. Wasn't Bubba Ray there? So maybe we're better off.
Right. But then we lose the Mae Young going through a table. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm willing to trade that off for the rest of the Bubba.
you're not a fan of the Bully Ray?
All right, let's get our grades in here. So match quality, again, this is like a really good, I think it's overlooked what a great sprint this is.
Yeah,
because it's good. No downtime. It's just, it's insanity. So I went 6 out of 10.
I did too. And it's just, you're right, it's a sprint. And Sheik gets his stuff in, which is fine. We get the loaded boot and shit like that. It gets all his stuff in, but what, it's like 6 minutes?
Yep. Yep.
Like, and it's just 6 minutes of catharsis. So I'm on board.
Yeah. All right, significance, I don't think we can understate this in any way. It's a 10.
Yeah, it's a 10. Like the most important title, like it's the biggest change ever, I think.
Right. If we're ever going to Meltzer and break this scale, it'd be now. Like if you wanted to give us an 11 and nothing else at 11, we'd probably be justified in doing it.
Right, and this will probably ensure that nothing else gets a 10 or if it comes very close.
Right, right. The moment, also a 10. Obviously, we talked about it, but it was an incredible moment.
Yeah, I'm easy. I had a 9, but as we were talking about it, I bumped it up to a 10. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Right. I saw that and I was like, I was like, come on. What's going to be a better moment than this, you know? The builds, I gave a 2 because there really just wasn't a ton to it. It was Backlund endorsing Hogan and that was it. And Backlund getting pulled out of the match.
Yeah, it was basically like Backlund coming out of the ring, blinded by salt, patting him on the shoulder and saying, go get him.
Right. And that was it. And then aftermath again, I mean, yeah. It builds even if the WWF dies in like 97, like the run they have from 84 to 88, 89 is incredible and built on the back of this title change.
Yeah. And I want to say it's the first time I can remember, but it's when wrestling became like a transcendent event, right? Like you're seeing Hogan on Saturday Night Live, you're seeing like him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. He's more of a household name. I can't really attest to how big a household name Bruno Sammartino was.
Right. Not like this. Maybe in New York, but not national or worldwide.
No. And I think Hulk Hogan, brother. I think Hulk Hogan ends up becoming like, I would imagine he's the celebrity that has the hardest time concealing his identity.
Like, yes,
in a public
right,
like he's big, he's already this giant man, and then the mustache, like, mm-hmm. like there's no way a pair of sunglasses is doing it.
No, definitely not, or even a hoodie or those baggy JNCOs. So yeah, this obviously is what the company's built on. I mean, there's just no way to top it, so it is what it is. So I guess this is a total score of 76.
Yeah. And we're not, I mean, we could go on and on too about like, cause we're talking about the aftermath. I mean, it's almost enough to just say, this is what the company's built on, right? Like his popularity and whatnot, but he's got some really classic feuds during this reign too.
Yep.
That hold up quality wise. Like you could speak to the Piper feud, the Orndorff feud, even mm-hmm. the feud we're going to get into next,
Bundy.
Which I guess was, yeah, Bundy, like all super memorable stuff and like high quality stuff too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that like early on, maybe this might be the influence of guys like Scott Keith and stuff. But earlier, I remember joining the internet wrestling community and thinking Hulk Hogan was like a terrible worker.
Right.
Right.
Like, not true. Yeah.
No, you watch his stuff and it's like, you know, even if you just go with his formula stuff, it was so effective. But early Hogan is like a bundle of great energy.
Yeah. And Scott and I really dove way into it on Place to Be because we did every MSG at pay-per-view and Sarah Smith event from 85 to 92. I mean, that's basically the Hogan era. And like the 3-match series of Morocco and MSG in spring, summer of 85 is great. And then the Savage series at 85, 86 is like awesome too. They have some really good matches. So there's so many little things like that to showcase his abilities, even outside of the big matches that everyone knows. But then you can get the Harley match on Saturday's main event, like the Funk match on Saturday's main event. There's so much good stuff in there loaded up. And I'll point you to the 24-inch podcast Steve Bennett and Hollywood Dave Rollins do on the Sportscasters feed for more of that Hogan era stuff too, because they're touching on a lot of that too. So I'll be curious, like we said, like this no other title match may hit these tens of moment, significance, and aftermath. That said, there's still a big gap between this and a perfect score. So it'll be curious to see if other matches can make up that ground and come close or pass it.
When it's all played out on the build for this one.
Yep. That too. Yeah.
Like, when you look at it, like, everything is, like, I mean, the match quality, we both have at 6, so it's not perfect, but it's good. But it's really that build that hurts it. So, but that's pretty common to all of the matches so far that we've touched on.
Yeah, I think what hurt it before this one is we weren't around. This is not a lot. We haven't dug in deep. I'm sure maybe some build for a couple, but we're going to see that start to grow now, obviously, starting with the next one. All right, so before we do that, Aaron, just real quick, you want to tell us about what's going on the North-South?
Yeah, there's great stuff dropping every single day on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. We've been really lucky. We've been going on, we're almost at 2 years now, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And we've had consistently, I think, pretty strong content from the very beginning. Look, if you're on Mondays, you're looking at now entering the Royal Rumble. You and I are going through every Rumble appearance. Also dropping, I believe it's either Sunday night or Monday morning, Chronoso with the two lines. So one of which is going through the PG era. And they just hit the WrestleMania the Raw after WrestleMania 24, which was a really fun listen. And the other line is early WCW, NWA. So they're stopping, though, once they get to WCW, right? Is that the idea there?
Yeah, the plan is they're going to go up to Nitro. So pretty much up to where, so not where WCW starts, but yeah, they're going to go up to the Nitro era. So up to like where me and Chad started on Wrestling Warzone.
Yeah, that's where WCW matters. So
right. Yeah. So they're going right up to 95, pretty much. That's the plan.
Yeah. So that's dropping on Sundays. You get viewers' choice after every single pay-per-view, where Marcus and Tim save me all kinds of time. I don't have to watch the terrible matches thanks to them. TNA Never Dies on Tuesday, Thrillingly Aggressive on Tuesdays. New Gen on a Mission Wednesdays, always great with JP and Slomka. They're nailing it every week. Thursdays, Wrestling Warzone. Did it drop on Thursday, the AEW podcast? You know what time it is?
That's, you know what that means is the name of it.
You know and what that means. Fuck, what am I doing?
I know what time it is.
Because I just call it the AEW podcast in my head when I listen to it.
So that is every other Friday it drops.
That's right. That's right. This week in the NFL is dropping too. And No Holds Barred on Saturdays, along with some Squared Circle to Silver Screen. 90210 No So is hipping too. I listened to the Rocco episode. Rocco's the man.
Oh, that was such a fun one. That's such a wild episode of 90210. It's insanity. And I will just say quickly, Wrestling Warzone is on a little bit of a hiatus. Just some personal stuff in the way there. So we will be back. It's not gone forever, but it's going to be a little bit before it's returned.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll say is that I find, like, the best podcasts, the ones I like listening to the most, are the ones where when I'm listening in my car, I feel like I'm part of the conversation.
Right.
Like, it's kind of like inspiring thought and whatnot. And I find so many of the podcasts on our feed do that. So, you know, if you have time to give us a rating, to subscribe, even to share the content, like, we love bringing it to you. But anything we can do to grow is greatly appreciated.
Agreed. What's also greatly appreciated is our next match, and that is Hulk Hogan defending the world title against Andre the Giant, February 5th, 1988, from Indianapolis, Indiana, airing on primetime network television Friday night on NBC, the main event. And this was a big deal because I believe it's, the first primetime wrestling show since like the 50s or some crazy shit?
Yeah, it's certainly the first primetime wrestling show on NBC. As part of that Saturday night's main event, like, conglomerate,
but I think it was like, even since like the Gorgeous George era, like any primetime national wrestling.
Yeah, I think so. This is when I actually watched live.
Oh, that's wild. What was that like?
Well, I mean, I can only remember. Shocking is the word that comes to mind.
Right.
But yeah, I remember like thinking like, what? Like I couldn't believe it. And I had only been a fan at this point for like maybe like 5-6 months. But it was still shocking. I can't even imagine having the weight of the 4-year title reign behind it.
Right. And this drew a 15.2 rating, which is fucking monstrous.
It's an absurd number of people. It must still be up among the most watched wrestling shows ever.
I would think so. I mean, the next ones do okay, too. Like, the next year in 89 with the Mega Powers and Twin Towers did an 11.6. And actually, the third one with Hogan Savage and Buster Douglas did a 12.8. So, they did pretty well for them. But, I mean, 15.2 is just absurd. And they had a big card. I mean, Randy Savage was the Honky Tonk Man for the IC title.
Which you thought Savage was winning.
Right. And depending on the different lore you believe, was meant to. And then right. Hogan Andre. And then forgotten in this, the last match was meant to be Strikeforce versus the Heart Foundation, which is, again, a world title tag title match. So they really loaded this show up. We don't get to see much of that because the time runs out. But
with good reason. We're also worried and upset.
Yeah, and it was smart of them to just leave it for the end, to just, like, fill time until the end and not try and squeeze it in before this match and then hit the wall on, you know, not go over. So, but a big-time, massive, mega-money match. The build and story has been tremendous, of course, dating back to 86 when Andre got suspended. Bobby Heenan mysteriously gets him unsuspended, and that plays out over, like, prime time and TV, right, where they talk about it constantly throughout all of 86. He returns in early 87. Gets pissed off about the trophy, rips off Hogan's cross. They have the one of the biggest matches, if not the biggest match in company history, WrestleMania 3.
Greatest, too.
Hogan wins, okay. Hogan wins. Andre goes out with the back injury, makes the Princess Bride and all that. And then, or it's Princess Bride 86. Is that why he went away in 86? I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah, 87, he's got the back injury. Comes back, has the amazing showdown at Survivor Series, another all-time classic. The contract signing at the Rumble, where they get into it and then
dumps the table on him.
Yes, such a great
gently
moment. And that was the big draw of that on USA, and now here we are. So all of that happened over the course of almost 2 years leading up to this.
So we're gonna, maybe when we get to a bust our bit, we'll finally have a nice build score for this.
Correct.
One, I feel.
Yes, and don't forget too, like, it ties into their friendship, that clip of Andre with the champagne with Hogan in 84. So all of it builds to this moment.
And what's incredible too is that, like, you've just mentioned this, all this great build, right? But we've also still omitted, there's an entirely different build going on with Ted DiBiase.
Yes, all that too, right? So DiBiase debuted in 87, and he kept making, you know, after he got established, started making, you know, trying to make inroads to try and buy the world title from Hulk Hogan. He kept making offers. Hogan kept refusing. So DiBiase basically said, okay, well, I'm going to buy it another way. And he went and purchased the contract of Andre the Giant from Bobby Heenan. So he is now with Andre. He's in his employment. And him and Virgil are ringside for this one. And go ahead.
I was going to say just too, I love too the promo that Hogan cuts. I guess it's on Superstars where he's thinking about selling it. Right. He's like, he gets really serious for a moment. He's like, I'm going to have to say to you, Ted DiBiase, hell no. And he holds no for like 30 seconds.
He's like shaking as he's doing it. I think that was in December of 87, I think.
Yeah. And the crowd is just losing it.
Yeah.
As he's screaming.
It's like a forgotten piece of this whole feud. You're right. The Hogan DiBiase aspect of it. So Jesse is obviously on commentary here with Vince, and Jesse is like amazing out of the gate, and it's such a small detail, but you pick it up once you know what happens later. In the beginning of the match, he says, I feel so much better that Dave Heppner is the referee in this match and not Joey Morella, because a big part of the angle since WrestleMania 3 was that Andre feels he was screwed at Mania, that Joey Morella fucked the count up, and he thought he had Hogan pinned in the early seconds of that match when he fell on him. And Joey, you know, we even get the infamous two fingers and all that. So that has been part of this. Like, Bobby uses that as a reason that Andre deserves a title rematch, that he never got his rematch because Joey Morella fucked him at Mania 3.
Yeah, and they mentioned in the never mind just Jesse, they mentioned it in the pre-match promo too.
Yes. Yep. So, you know, this is like a big part of it. And Hogan's pre-match promo is his typical, he would do at every Saturday's main event with his puns based on who he was fighting. So he's talking about stock portfolios and everything else on this one. And I love too in the entrances. So Andre comes out, he's all just stands there stoic. Hogan is like a fucking bad man. And Jesse says it. He's like, Andre has been conserving energy, he's been cool, he's calm. And Hogan is like worked up into a fucking frenzy and maybe burnt out because of it.
Yeah, and I love that I love that he mentions it, but I love how Andre just calmly watches all the theatrics that Hogan does too.
Yes.
He's just, okay, all right, here, he's doing his shit. You know, forget who it was a few years ago. It was like, okay, come on. I think it was Kevin Owens talking about Cena. All right, come out. We know the act.
Right, right.
Like, that's the vibe I got from Andre here.
Right, he's seen it a million fucking times. Like, he doesn't care. He just wants to start beating the shit out of him and get his job done.
That's it. And the last time they fought, Andre won. Right.
Yes.
which I think is interesting. Like he didn't pin him, but he is coming in as a victorious challenger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean the build is unreal for this. So Hogan cleans house. He's red hot. Like everyone, DiBiase, Virgil, they all bite it.
And the crowd like just brutalizes them.
He's going insane. And I love it too, because then he starts going at Andre, and Andre will not go down. Like no. He's staggering, and the crowd is waiting for it. Jesse's calling like, Andre won't go down. And Hogan's just unloading, just a wild, insane flurry.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead, do you have anything before this next
part? Well, I was going to say, I love that, like, number one, I feel like you and I know DiBiase could be out of that suit within 3 seconds.
Yes, he refuses, though.
But like, yeah, but it's like, so it's already, the crowd is already in a frenzy when he's punching DiBiase and Virgil. But then when he starts punching Andre, like there's nothing like this that happened. The closest I can think of to what this is like nowadays, the closest atmosphere is the Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson match.
Right.
Where like everybody's just like, yeah, the whole time, like and into it the whole time.
It's insanity. I mean, the crowd is just locked in.
And it's crazy this on free TV. Like, I get why they did it, but like, it's insane that this mm-hmm. big a match is given away for free on television.
Well, I think there's a couple things there. So one, they've already done it on pay-per-view. So they've cashed in. And two, I think there was an argument to be made that this would actually in the end be more profitable for them than doing it on pay-per-view because of the eyeballs and where the slot time slot is and all that. So, and we saw like WrestleMania 4, I don't know how they do buy rate wise, but like,
it's not the same.
Right.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's crazy. Like it and cool. Also like a really great spot. I don't know if this is where you're going. There's a great spot early on where DiBiase is consoling Virgil on the outside and Hogan stomps on his hand and money goes flying everywhere.
I mean, it's just like the Three Stooges right now with Hogan just rattling all three of them.
Yeah.
No, but I was going to the next part where Hogan makes a rare fatal mistake. Tom. So he is in complete control, dominating this match, and for some reason goes to the top rope.
Yeah.
Which he never does. And Andre slams him. So a real stupid move, trying to do too much. And Jesse calls it out again, of course, just how dumb it was that he went up top.
And Jesse, around this point, like number one, the crowd, like always in anybody in this era, the crowd is like uneasy around Andre, which I really love. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like late 80s Andre for how he makes the crowd feel. Like they're not always really booing. I was terrified of him as a child. Right. Like, so that's kind of my mindset with him. But I love too that once he slams him, Vince has great emotion on commentary. But Jesse's like, I can feel it. I can feel it, McMahon. This is it. Like, and I just find that's such a great little addition to the whole mm-hmm. picture here.
Yep. Yep. It's finally time. So Andre's gaining steam. He's clobbering Hogan. The crowd starts to edge a little bit. They're getting a little nervous now. And Jesse again calls out how great Hebner's been in the match. I love the spot. And I think it's just because Andre's body, but Andre hits a big boot and falls backwards as Hogan falls outside. Yeah. And I know it's just because Andre's body's giving out, but it felt like he nailed him so hard, it even knocked himself off balance. And not just that Andre's body doesn't allow him to do it, but it just looked like really cool. Like it was an extra hard shot to the face.
Yeah, I was worried he hurt himself on that.
Right.
Because of that awkward fall backwards. But all his blows, I don't think he gets enough credit. I mean, I guess it's just the aura of him. But even when all of his blows look like just devastating on Hogan. Mm-hmm. Like everything. He does one chop and you're like, oh God, Hogan's dead. And it's such an interesting contrast that we just talked about Sheik, how like Hogan looked like a giant compared to Sheik. And then you see him in here with an actual giant, right?
Yep. So Hogan powers out of a choke and then just starts to go at it. So that's another great moment. The crowd going wild. Hogan drops the leg on Andre, takes him down, drops the leg, but the ref is yelling at Virgil. And he can't count. And it seems comically long that he's arguing with Virgil. But again, it's just like a nice layer of, you know, in the moment you're thinking, what the fuck? And then when you look back at it, it's like, oh, like he's obviously doing it on purpose. Yeah. So Andre hits the double underhook suplex, I guess his nominal finisher.
When you also get Vince, I love Vince counting to five on the leg drop. Yes. 1, 2, come on. And then right before he hits that suplex, I always remember this call. Vince goes, Lady Luck riding on Andre's shoulders tonight.
Yeah.
I just That stuck. Maybe it's because I watch it live, but that's been in my head for now over 30 years, right?
It's a great call. And him and it can't be understood how great Vince and Jesse are in this match. Just, I mean, Vince is always his best in the big moments like this where he can get the story over. And Jesse is like perfect for this. This is to me where the endless Bobby Jesse argument, actually saw someone recently defend Bobby over Jesse because of the way Jesse would make the face as a girl look dumb. But to me, as great as Bobby is, like Jesse, there's no way Bobby does in this moment what Jesse does. Like, Jesse's legitimacy and gravity that he carries to all this is what helps make this resonate even more.
Yeah, I think Bobby's the funniest color commentator of all time. Jesse's the best.
Right.
Like, because he not that Bobby couldn't do serious, but he doesn't do it like this. And even something as simple as just Jesse's vocal tone.
Yep.
Like that deeper, like there was the word you used before, gravitas, was bang on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... he's perfect for this match and this era. So Andre gets a suplex and covers. Hogan kicks up at two.
He's on his stomach.
Right. But the ref counts anyway, deliberately counts. Yeah. And everyone is shook. Like
the crowd is pissed.
There's this older fan in the front row with like a blue sweater. I never really noticed. He just shakes his head and mouths no. He's like right in the front. And he's like booing everywhere. Nobody can believe that this is how it went down, that Hogan's title reign of, 4 years has just ended. And this is how it happened. Like this chicanery, this nonsense. Hogan did not overcome it for once.
No.
Just wild.
And I think in a lot of ways, like, I mean, we'll talk about if it's obvious or not, but as a kid, I wasn't, but like, this feels like a surprising place to switch the title to Andre. Indianapolis, but also like the timing that it's the third match of the series. Like you'd think if Andre was going to win the title, he would have won it the first match. So I think now it's obvious in hindsight because we know what happens, right? But like, why would he lose the title here, right? At the time, I just think it's shocking at the time because you're usually expecting. I think everyone's expecting him to just kind of roll over Andre here and go into WrestleMania and maybe fight Ted DiBiase at this point. Unless you're clued in or whatever.
Right. Or maybe Andre again, like maybe a fuck finish here.
Yeah.
And you go Hogan Andre 3, at Mania, which could have been fine too.
All right. Say we got Hogan. Well, we did get Hogan Andre 3 at Mania.
We do. Hogan bitches out Hebner, but Hebner ignores them, gets the belt and gives it to Andre. Yeah. Vince is going nuts. He's like, what a stupid mistake. He's like calling him out. Yeah. And Jesse says there's no instant replay in wrestling and humans make mistakes. So that's
he shits on football.
Yeah, we're done. This ain't football. This is what it is, buddy. Sorry, we're done. And as Andre takes that belt, the heat is just fucking crazy.
And then what Andre says, right? He goes, this is no surprise. I told you I was going to win.
Right. Why is anyone shocked? And he says, as he promised, he surrenders the belt to Ted DiBiase.
Immediately.
The world heavyweight title, and that's it.
Yeah, it's funny too because I love Andre's arrogance. Like this is no surprise, but in his mind, character wise anyway, he's beaten Hogan every time he's fought him.
Right. Yeah.
So it's true. Yeah, no surprise.
So Jesse gets another great line. He says the myth of Hulk Hogan is over. That's it. So it's dead. He's been defeated. That's it. Can never again say he's undefeated as world champion. This will always be a black mark on there. Andre gives the belt to DiBiase. Hogan grabs Dave Hebner. And then out comes another Hebner. And now we have all kinds of confusion.
Yeah, and Hogan's rage is like, I don't know if I've ever seen him this angry about anything.
Right. He is just losing his fucking mind. And everyone is like confused. Like, what is going on? How is there a second Hebner? I like that no one raises the idea that they just have a twin. No one ever says like, oh, he has a twin brother. It gets paid off. It's like... They go to like the most crazy lengths right away. Like,
how much did you pay for the plastic surgery?
They're just like going to like insane lengths already. So Hogan breaks up the Hebner press conference between each other, picks one of them up. One of the Hebners slugs the other one and they realize that's the bad Hebner. So he picks up the bad Hebner and almost ends his life because DiBiase and Virgil are trying to hustle back to ringside to take this bump because they were down the aisle.
Yeah.
But they overrun the mark, and Hogan just fucking flings him. And he goes over DiBiase and Virgil and slams to the fucking ground. I don't know how that guy was walking after that.
I think that's why they had a job for as long as they did.
Oh my Lord. Just what a bump. Like, it's almost like forgotten this chaos is what a bump that is.
Do you think his adrenaline was just so, like, pumping?
Oh,
so
yeah,
hard.
He just opened room. Yeah, he just couldn't control it. And then I do think Virgil and DiBiase were running back and overran the mark. Because I think they broke too late because they were down the aisle with Andre. Because you see it, as he's already picked Hebner up, they're just starting to run back. So,
oh, shit, like, we got to catch Hebner.
Yeah, we got to go back. And Hogan, he ain't waiting. So you would think he'd throw him short, but somehow he goes long over them.
I've never seen a man as a man ever been thrown that far.
God, I don't know. I don't know.
Like,
I'm curious of the distance.
You've got the power of Hulkamania, right? But you've also got the rage of losing.
It's like a Giancarlo Stanton home run that fucking launches. So, I mean, look, the whole thing is just a fantastic story. It's groundbreaking. It was insane. Well executed. I can only imagine, like you said, like being aware enough, but not in the know and seeing this. Like, imagine being a 5-year or like a 4-year long diehard fan of Hogan and witnessing this. It must have been crazy at a time where like it was still believed, you know?
It's very possible I cried when this happened. Like, I don't know, but I could maybe see that happening.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, I would think they were definitely probably fans crying and stuff.
Like, I was 8, so. Like, I taped this. I had it on tape forever. I watched it over and over and over again. I tell my friends, look, it's not fair. What happened to him?
It's crazy. I mean, the fact that they finally get the belt off him, and they still protect him, too. And you know what is, like, an underrated part of that? Not only – because you may look at it and say, oh, Hogan didn't want a job, or whatever the fuck. But it protects Hogan to still get another big money match at some point with someone beating him clean.
Yeah, which is something they hadn't really done.
Right.
Like, that Backlund never came back and got his – did he ever come back and get his win over the Sheik?
No, I think he's – I mean, maybe he did, but it wouldn't have mattered. I mean,
because I'm trying to think of like, because this feels like the first time they really do this level of bullshit finish, right?
Right.
And then with the idea to keep the guy strong for when he comes back.
Right. I don't know if Backlund. I'm not sure when he's gone.
But no matter what. Regardless, this is the first, this feels like, at least in our list anyway, the first time where they're clearly not ready to pass the baton yet to somebody else completely.
Right. Yeah. So Backlund's around till July of 84, but he never, he doesn't fight, Sheik again. That's it.
Right. Then he pops back up in 92 or whenever it is.
Right.
But it's like this is interesting. This I've always said that I think one of the big reasons why we've never gotten that next big superstar in the vein of say a Hogan or an Austin is because when that person loses the title, they always end up sticking around, right?
Right.
Like in this period, you know, Backlund loses, he goes away, so you know Hogan's all to himself. Eventually, Hogan leaves. And, you know, that's when Brett's able to kind of step up, you know, and, you know, Brett leaves and you got Austin. So this is kind of the first time where the big guy loses and he's still such a major focal point of the company without a replacement.
Yep. Which is funny because he got hosed. And like I was saying, like they get to get two big money matches out of his losses. Like they get to have the first time he loses the belt. But he wasn't pinned clean. So now we can, at some point, set someone up to be the first guy to pin him clean. And they do it. And it's a big match. So they get extra bang for the buck.
Yep. And you get to build this tournament. And this is this is actually how I learned what the word vacant meant.
Oh, there you go. Not from a motel on the side of the road?
Not from a... No, no.
But this event meant as much if they said abeyance instead of vacant?
That's how I learned what that word meant, too. And I was 34 years old at the time, so...
All right, so we do get the awesome Hogan post-match interview where he's in tears, just freaking out. Like, how much did they pay for the plastic surgery? Just an epic fucking meltdown from Hogan here. to wrap this up.
$0, you idiot.
Like, how did none of them realize it's a twin?
I know. We have to go to, like, the Lee Harvey Oswald level of conspiracy here.
Well, I'm surprised Jesse didn't. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what.
All right, so match, match quality. Obviously, a bit of a dip down. So I went with a four here. I thought it was fine, but this is all about the theatrics. And, like, the best move of the match to me is that Andre Big Boot where he just collapses backwards.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the Hogan clothesline where he finally knocks him down.
That and when he cleans out DiBiase. Like, DiBiase takes a great bump on that.
Oh, yeah. I'll be honest. This match was better than I expected. I was expecting to go lower before I rewatched it. And I was like, it was okay. It was fine.
We don't have time too much to get into this, but I want to throw it out there for a future episode. Would DiBiase have been better as a manager? No, I guess we know. He's not. Okay.
No. We have evidence.
Maybe in this era, though, I'm saying.
Maybe. Yeah, like
I guess we do have 2 years of evidence that it's not the case. All right, significance. So this felt, you know, obviously it means a lot. It's the end of Hogan's first reign. It sets up a tournament. Andre gets the world title. DiBiase, I guess, gets a world title ran out of it. It's a big match on NBC, so it draws a big rating. But again, because it's like 8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I'm all those reasons. At the time, it felt important. It still feels important. Like, yeah,
I'm
good.
It's just not as important as...
No, because it doesn't change. I mean, every title change, I guess, changes the course of the history of the company, but not anywhere near the same level.
Okay. The moment I went 9, it's one of the most memorable, iconic WWF programs in history. The Hepners, Andre winning the belt, selling, you know, handing it to DiBiase.
Yeah.
Hogan flipping out, throwing a Hepner, Jesse, like everything about it, the crowd, it's hard to top it as a moment. I mean, it will get topped, but it's hard to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had it an 8, but I bumped it up when I bumped up the other one to a 10. Yeah, it's still incredible. And the atmosphere, you can just feel the atmosphere in the building, right? Right.
All right, speaking of bumping up, I'm bumping up the build to 10. Yeah, as we went through it, I'm like, I don't know how much more they could have done to possibly hype this match.
No, it's like a 2-year feud. It's arguably one of the best feuds of all time, right? And then culminating in this match. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about the build. Like, look, it was already exciting when you were talking about the build before, and then you add in the DiBiase stuff, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, come on.
All right, aftermath. I'm going to get you to bump this up too, so we can have it tied with the last match, but
I'm not going
to
bump it up.
All right. I mean, the aftermath is great. Obviously it, you know, it leads to Andre, you know, DiBiase gets stripped of the title. We get the big tournament at WrestleMania 4, which sets up obviously Randy Savage becoming world champion and kicks off the Mega Powers angle, which is the next biggest angle in company history right there after that. So that doesn't really probably get fired up without this in place.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm still at a 6 for it though.
So I guess it's a total of 75. So one notch below Hogan Sheik, which I guess is fair because Hogan Sheik launched. But, you know, it's right there with it for sure.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because this one's carried on the build.
Yep.
It's kind of the opposite of the other match, which I think is cool. And this is cool because this is a match that you probably wouldn't normally give a lot of credit to.
Right.
Right? Like it ends up being this kind of throwaway thing, but... No, man, like it's such an important thing and it's fun and it's good and it's effective. Like it's super effective in what it sets out to do. And I think that matters too.
Agreed. All right. I would say this one was not obvious.
Nope. I will not. I will also agree. It was not obvious.
Okay. All right. Look, that was great. I really loved digging into those two matches. We're going to hit 2 again next time, Aaron. So we're going to do the Randy Savage story. So we're going to do Savage DiBiase at WrestleMania 4 and then Savage Hogan at WrestleMania 5 to really dive in. Those felt like a good bookend couple pieces there to cover. So we'll dig into that. We'll touch on Savage's reign in between and the Mega Power stuff and all that. Real quick, should we just go through the total? So last place we have with
Pedro Morales and Stan Stasiak.
Yeah, that's 16 points.
Yeah.
And then next with 31 points
is Morales, San Martino Stasiak.
Poor Stan. Then with 32 points is Pedro and Koloff. No, I'm sorry. Bruno Koloff.
Bruno Koloff.
Then 39 points as Pedro Koloff.
Yeah. And then after that, you're looking at Bruno Graham.
Yep, 41.
Then Graham Backlund, 43.
Yep. Then Backlund Sheik at 49.
Yeah. And the aforementioned Bruno Buddy Rogers, 51.
Then Hogan Andre with 75 points.
And the greatest WWF title change of all time, Hogan Sheik at 76.
Quick prediction before we wrap. Will that get topped, and how soon does it happen?
I think it might happen within the next 2 episodes.
Okay.
But I don't know. We'll see, right? Oh, it's going to depend. It's going to depend how the scores bang out. It's going to be another one where something's going to be inverted.
Right. Okay.
What's your prediction on it?
I think it happens. I don't think it's as soon as you're saying, though.
Yeah, we'll see.
Dookie's been dropped. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Take care.
Jockass, we didn't...